in the coming days. In 1 minute, we'll begin. As I said, if you'd like to receive a copy of the recording and the workbook, please send me a direct message with your email address. Okay, I will begin. Welcome to tonight's workshop. Tonight's workshop is all about stress. We're going to be looking at how you can manage and overcome stress with hypnosis. So the agenda. We're going to talk a little bit about what stress is, why you experience stress, why everyone experiences stress, the different types of stress. Going to talk about emotional contagion and how emotions, including stress, can actually be contagious. We're going to talk about complex PTSD or CPTSD, the limbic system. We're going to be looking at exercises to help with emotions. And then at the end of tonight's workshop, we're going to have a short hypnosis session to end. Starting next month, I have a new program which is all about stress and anxiety. I'll be talking a little bit about that as we move through tonight's workshop. So, what are you looking to get from this workshop? How will you know that this workshop has been successful? Let me know your answers in the chat box. Now, if you want to receive a copy of the recording and a workbook, please send me your email address in the chat box. You can send a private message via Zoom. If you click the there's a blue button at the top of the chat box where you type your message, and if you click on that, you will bring up my name. Select my name and then you'll be able to send me a direct message. So you'll be closer with your partner, you'll close down, calming down your neurotic symptomology, excellent. You'll know how to define and better understand what stress is, excellent. Better ability to deal with stressful situations. Excellent. Okay, so these are all great things to be looking to get from tonight's workshop. And I'm sure we'll be able to help you with them. So, what is stress? When we perceive a threat, we move into the fight or flight response. And our body is gonna release all kinds of hormones, such as adrenaline, to give us energy quickly to allow us to fight back or run away from the threat. So stress is a hormonal reaction to stresses. And stressors are threats. Those threats can be perceived or real. When a person experiences stress, their body releases all kinds of hormones such as cortisol. So everyone experiences stress. A little stress can be beneficial. A little stress, as I said, can get you out of danger. It can get you out of negative situations. But prolonged stress can have all kinds of negative impacts on our lives and physical health. Prolonged stress, if you are in the fight or flight response, that energy that would be used by your immune response to protect you from colds and illnesses is going to be sent to your muscles so that you can escape dangerous situations, so that you can fight back or run away. So prolonged stress can reduce your immune response, making you more susceptible to colds, viruses, can cause inflammation in the body, which can cause all kinds of illnesses and problems. High cortisol levels can increase blood pressure. They can cause weight gain and inflammation, as I just said. Living with stress can cause stomach ulcers, irritable bowel syndrome, burnout, depression, heart disease. It can cause eating disorders and a lot more. So the different types of stress. In psychological studies and research, stress is usually divided into three different categories. They are acute stress, episodic stress, and chronic stress. Acute stress is quite normal, and it can be caused by new or challenging situations. You may experience acute stress when you avoid an accident, if you speak in public, or ride on a roller coaster. When someone experiences acute stress, they're moving into that fight or flight response. So the symptoms that you're going to experience are going to be symptoms that would allow you to get out of dangerous situations, such as an increased heart rate, which is going to get the blood flowing around your body, going to get the blood flowing to your muscles so you can fight back or run away. Sweating to allow you to cool down in any kind of physical activity that your mind perceives may be coming. You're going to be breathing more rapidly, trying to get more oxygen into your lungs, into your body, so that you can act physically. Episodic acute stress is when acute stress occurs repeatedly. Someone who's constantly exposed to stressful environments, such as fighter pilots or people who work to deadlines, may experience episodic acute stress. Repeatedly being exposed to stress is when it starts to become a problem. Spending long periods of time in the fight or flight response can cause anxiety, can cause migraines, because it'll cause you to hold a lot of tension in your neck and shoulders. It's going to put a lot of pressure on your neck muscles, which can lead to migraines, high blood pressure, muscle tension. And when you're experiencing stress or anxiety, you're in the fight or flight response. And also part of the fight or flight response is anger. So it's very easy to go from stressed to angry, or from angry to anxious, because you're already on that scale. So does anyone have any questions with regards to anything I've covered so far? Any questions with regards to any of that? Let me know in the chat. Fantastic. Then we come to chronic stress. Chronic stress is the big issue. Chronic stress occurs when someone is repeatedly exposed to stressors over a long period of time. So someone with an abusive boss or an abusive family, an abusive romantic partner may experience chronic stress. This kind of stress can cause weight gain, can cause insomnia, fatigue, and all of the acute stress symptoms that we've already covered. And as I spoke about at the beginning of tonight's workshop, you can actually catch stress. Emotions are actually contagious. People who work in high stress environments or live in high stress environments can actually catch stress from others in that environment, usually higher ranking members. So if you're the CEO of a company and you experience a lot of stress, you want to try and keep away from your workers and colleagues, because then they're going to catch it from you. They're going to become stressed out. This phenomenon is known as emotional contagion. And as I said, lower ranking team or family members are going to be especially susceptible to catching the emotions of higher ranking family or team members. So if you're a CEO, a mother or a father, particularly with young children, up until the 15 months to 3 years, a baby can't tell the difference between themselves and the outside world. You were a we before you became an I. And in that time period, the baby is looking to their parents to help them co-regulate their emotions. If you've ever tried to comfort a baby who's upset and crying, and that's caused you to feel anxious or upset, you'll notice that adds to the baby's dysregulation, because they're picking up on what you're feeling. So if you don't want to have a negative impact on your family or team members, you would do well to reduce your stress level. So stress is a feeling, and like all feelings and emotions, it serves a purpose. All humans and animals experience stress. Stress can alert a person when something is wrong, and it can give them the motivation to deal with a stressor or dangerous situation. If you're in an abusive environment, if you're around someone who is dangerous, it can give you the motivation to move away from that person, to move away from a dysfunctional relationship. But there's a difference between stress and stressors. A stressor is an occurrence or our perception of it that stresses us out. Anything that causes us to feel threatened or overwhelmed could be a stressor. So some examples of stressors could be financial worries, relationship issues, traumatic events, traffic jams, unemployment, pressure at work. All of these things can be stressors. Any unpredictable and unforeseen occurrence can be a stressor. So what are your main stressors? What are the things that cause you the most stress? Let me know in the chat box. What are your main stresses? Let me know your main stresses in the chat box. Financial worries, bad bosses. Money, work, relationships. Yep. So, stress is an emotion. And like all emotions, all feelings, it serves a purpose. Emotions are like warning lights on your car dashboard. If you're driving along and you're running low on fuel, a little light comes on to tell you that you need to go and get fuel. And you know, you go to the petrol station or gas station, if you're American, you get some fuel and the little light goes off. Emotions work the same way. As I said previously, when you're experiencing stress, anxiety, or anger, you're moving into that fight or flight response. It's going to give you the energy to get out of dangerous situations, to fight back, or to run away. Many of us can become shamed out of our emotions. We all take on toxic shame to some degree. Toxic shame, again, shame is an emotion. It allows us to function in the world. It lets us know when we need help, lets us know when we've transgressed our values or breach someone else's boundaries. As children, shame enables us to separate from our parents in a safe way. Toxic shame is created when we internalize abuse, abandonment, criticism. All of these things are going to create toxic shame. As I said, everyone is going to develop toxic shame to some degree, particularly if you grow up with some form of dysfunction. Some estimates say that could be as much as 80% of people. A child, if they are growing up in a dysfunctional environment, they don't want to see their parents as bad because that could be life-threatening. So they internalize that dysfunction, and it doesn't have to be extreme dysfunction. Just growing up in an environment where there's a lot of arguing, child's going to internalize that. They're going to think it means there's something wrong with them. It's going to create toxic shame. And society as a whole shames us out of our emotions. Anger is the first emotion that most of us become shamed out of as children. That when we go to school, we're told to shut up, sit down, pay attention. Schools don't like angry children. So this shames us out of anger. It shames us out of our anger response. And anger is a very dangerous emotion to become shamed out of, because without it, we're going to take on more and more toxic shame until we become an object of contempt to ourselves. So growing up with toxic shame can make us feel ashamed when we need help, feel angry, sad, assertive, sexual, joyous, or even confident. And to cope with that toxic shame, we need to alienate it from ourselves. So to try and suppress toxic shame, many people use food. Food is the most common substance that people use to try and suppress their emotions. So emotional eating is a very common form, a very common thing that people will go to try and suppress their toxic shame. Other people may act out, fly into rages, become narcissistic, have anger issues. Other people may act in through self-harm, addictions, eating disorders, etc. So As I said, all emotions serve a purpose. Sadness is an energy that we discharge in order to heal. Grieving is the healing feeling, according to John Bradshaw. Guilt can alert us when we've transgressed our values. Healthy shame can signal our limitations. Joy lets us know when our needs are being met. I spoke earlier about how up until 15 months to 3 years, you're looking to your parents to help you co-regulate your emotions. Until the age of seven is known as the imprint period. It's in that age range when we're looking to our parents and caregivers to help us understand the world, help us understand ourselves. And we're looking to them to model for us what healthy emotional regulation looks like, how we should handle our emotions. And because parents are generally going to parent the way they were parented, and parents have gone through the same school system as us, the school system that shamed them out of their emotions, told them to shut up and sit down, they're going to be out of touch with their emotions. And so they're not going to be able to model those emotions for their children. And so we learn unhelpful, unhealthy coping strategies. We learn to suppress our emotions. And what resists not only persists, but becomes stronger. The more you try and fight against a feeling or an emotion or a negative thought, the stronger it's going to become. The more energy you're giving it, and the stronger it's going to get. And as infants, we're going to learn to soothe ourselves by treating ourselves the same way we're treated by our parents and caregivers. So different emotions have different effects on the body. When you experience anger, your adrenaline is going to increase, blood's going to flow around your body, preparing to fight. The freeze response. When we go into the fight or flight response, we all go into the freeze response first. It allows us to fixate on the threat. Blood flows to the legs so that we can either fight back or run away. And your brain is going to release all kinds of opioids to act as painkillers for any kind of physical injury that your mind perceives may be coming. When a person experiences love, it's the complete opposite of the fight or flight response. They're going to be calm. And with happiness comes increased activity in the brain that actually inhibits your ability to worry. When someone's surprised, their eyes open, their eyebrows raise to allow more light to hit their retina, to allow more visual information to be taken in. So, do you struggle with other emotions? I spoke about how stress, when we experience stress, we're moving into the fight or flight response, and that can make us more susceptible to experiencing anxiety and anger. Do you struggle with your emotions? Do you struggle with anxiety or depression or any other emotions? Let me know in the chat box. Yeah. Yeah, mindfulness is a very good tool, Mitchell, absolutely. As I said, what resists not only persists, but becomes stronger. And practicing mindfulness, having a regular mindfulness practice can allow you to become an observer, to see your thoughts and emotions as separate from you, to realize you're not your thoughts and emotions, and to accept them, to ask yourself, what is this feeling trying to do for me right now? Is it relevant? If it's not relevant, to just allow it to be and carry on with what you need to do. And I'll be coming more to exercises that can help with that in a moment. Yep, low self-worth. Yep. Yep, anger. So, if you struggle with emotional regulation, if you grew up with some form of dysfunction, as I said, most people grow up with some form of dysfunction. No one makes it out of childhood without experiencing some kind of trauma. You may develop CPTSD, and CPTSD stands for Complex Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, suffered by prisoners of war and children who grow up in dysfunctional families. It's caused by neglect, physical, mental, and emotional abuse, ongoing and repeated trauma from which there's no escape. And for CPTSD to form, it requires a reliance on your abusers. So as a child, you're the perfect candidate to develop CPTSD because you can't fight back, you can't run away. And as I said, parents are generally going to parent the way they were parented. They've gone through that course, that school system that shamed them out of their emotions. So although they're doing the best they can with what they have, you know, they still have that generational trauma, which they are going to pass on to their children. So the symptoms of CPTSD are going to include issues with emotional regulation or emotional dysregulation, acting out, becoming narcissistic and abusive, or flying into rages, acting in, addictions, eating food, etc. You can have a constant feeling of unease, like there's something wrong with you, a negative self-image. You can have relationship issues. Relationships are often going to be very intense from the start and short-lived. Dissociation, flashbacks can be a form of dissociation. So can, you know, zoning out, going somewhere else in your mind, daydreaming, a fear of abandonment, and codependency, feeling that you need other people to make you feel okay, or, you know, addictions can be a form of codependency, looking outside of yourself to feel okay, or people pleasing, being afraid to say no, being doing everything you can because you fear other people abandoning you or leaving you if you don't do everything you possibly can to please them. So how many of those symptoms do you have? Let me know in the chat box. Five or six, yeah. Most of them. Absolutely. Yeah. So as I said, I have a 4-week stress and anxiety program, which is going to be starting in March. And in the chat box now, I'm going to share details of that with So in the chat box now, I'm pasting 3 links. The first link is to book a call with me if you want to find out more about one-to-one therapy or either of the programs. The second link is to find out more about the Inner Child program, which will be happening in April. That's a 4-week program. On the program, we do exercises to connect with the inner child. At the end of every session, we do a hypnosis session to reconnect with the inner child, to make the inner child feel safe, feel secure, to release toxic shame. And the third link is to the stress and anxiety program. Stress and anxiety program is a new program, and you can get that for the very special introductory price of just £50. And you can find details of that on the third link. all of the workshops are recorded. So if you miss a workshop, if you can't attend one workshop, you can download the recording and watch them back. You can also download the recordings and keep them to watch back at a later date. So on both programs, we are going to be looking to reduce anxiety, increase self-esteem, increase confidence to allow you to control your impulses and reconnect with your emotions. And they're both group programs. Some feedback from people that have previously done the programs. And with both programs, you're going to get access to a Facebook group where I put lots of content to help with emotional eating, negative self-talk, inner child healing. You're going to find all of that content in an exclusive Facebook group, which is just for people that do these two programs. So some feedback there. You can find more feedback via the links I shared in the chat box. Okay, so now we come to the limbic system. The limbic system supports a variety of functions, including emotion, behavior, long-term memory, and olfaction. That's your sense of taste and smell. Emotional life is largely housed in the limbic system, and it critically aids in the formation of memories. The limbic system is involved in lower order emotional processing of input sensory systems and consists of the amygdaloid nuclear complex. Source for that information is Wikipedia. So all the information your senses are taking in is being processed by the emotional part of your brain before they can reach the thinking part of your brain. So many times people, for example, when someone experiences PTSD, they may experience things that remind them of what's known as the activating event, the traumatic event that led to them developing PTSD. PTSD, again, if someone has good enough parents, they learn to process their trauma properly, they learn to process emotions properly. So it's a common belief that there is no PTSD without CPTSD. But anyway, when someone experiences PTSD, they experience flashbacks, and there's going to be things that their senses are picking up that remind them of that activating event that caused them to flash back to that activating event. It could be the smell of petrol, could be a car backfiring that reminds them of an explosion. And that is information is taken in, processed by their amygdala. And their amygdala is going to respond to what it perceives to be a threat before the thinking part of their brain has a chance to know what's going on. And traumatic memories carry more weight than ordinary memories. If you experience a trauma, if you're walking through the jungle and you hear a rustle in the bushes, you go and have a look and there's a big lion there, you need to remember that next time you're walking through a jungle and you don't hear and you hear that rustle in the bushes, you don't go and have a look. And people say that lions don't actually live in the jungle. They live in the savannah. But that isn't true, because I went to Bristol Zoo and they have lions there that come from the jungle. So lions actually do also live in the jungle. So if you experience a trauma, you need to remember it so that you can react to that trauma, so that you can avoid traumatic situations in the future. So if you want to stop being hijacked by emotional events, if you want to stop being hijacked by your amygdala, emotional flashbacks, as they are called when referring to CPTSD, you need to regulate your limbic system, or re-regulate your limbic system. Information, as I said, is processed by this part of the brain before the thinking part of the brain. And to the limbic parts of your brain, time and space is meaningless. Something that happened 10 seconds ago is going to carry the same emotional weight as something that happened 10 years ago. And as I said, traumatic memories carry more emotional charge than ordinary memories, because you need to be able to remember those traumatic memories so that you can avoid trauma in the future. So if you want to stop being hijacked by emotional responses, you need to regulate the limbic system. Doing so is going to allow you to go from reacting to acting. So how can you re-regulate your limbic system? Okay, so a few exercises you can use to re-regulate your limbic system. Firstly, you want to take a SUD score. SUD stands for subjective unit of distress. So on a scale of 1 to 10, you want to ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? 1 being not too bad, 10 being off the charts terrible. How stressed am I right now? Once you have that SUD score, let me know in the chat box. Let me know what your current SUD score is in the chat box. On a scale of 1 to 10, how stressed do you feel at the moment? Let me know your answers in the chat box. A seven. Five. So most of you are pretty low. Excellent. Okay, so once you have the SAT score, you can do some exercises to reduce those negative feelings. The first exercise I'm going to show you is called box breathing. Box breathing involves breathing in for a set number. For demonstration purposes tonight, we're going to make that number five. You can increase the number if you have good lung capacity. If you have bad lung capacity, you can reduce the number. But for tonight's demonstration, we're going to use the number five. So breathing in for the count of five, holding your breath for the count of five, breathing out for the count of five, and then holding the space between breaths for the count of five. And you want to breathe all the way down into your stomach. Wherever possible, you want to try and make the conscious effort to breathe into your stomach. It's said that children do this naturally, but for some reason, when we start school, when we're told to sit down, shut up, pay attention, we lose the ability to do this and we start breathing more shallowly into our chests. Breathing into your chest is very bad for you. It can cause your body to release all kinds of stress hormones. It can put you into that fight or flight state. So, making the conscious effort to breathe into your stomach wherever possible. If you ever watch someone sleeping, you'll notice it's their stomach that rises and falls as they breathe in and out. So, belly breathing is how we breathe when we are relaxed. So, taking a deep breath in for the count of five, holding your breath for five, breathing out for five, and then holding the space between breaths for five. If you'd like to try a couple of rounds of that on your own right now, breathing in for five. Holding your breath for five, breathing out for five, and then holding the space between breaths for five. So that's box breathing. The next exercise I'm going to show you is called 7-11 breathing. 7-11 breathing involves breathing in for a set number. For tonight's demonstration, we're going to make it seven. As I said, if you want, you can make that number larger. If you're a free diver or something, you have really good lung capacity, you might want to see how big you can make these numbers. If you have reduced lung capacity, if you have emphysema or something that stops you being able to breathe deeply, you might want to reduce these numbers. But tonight we are using the number seven, breathing in for the count of seven and then breathing out for the count of 11. Again, breathing all the way down into your stomach. Breathing in for seven. Maybe taking a short pause and then breathing out for the count of 11. And the theory on why this works is because you're elongating the out breath. And by breathing out for longer than you're breathing in, you're telling your mind that the information that your senses are taking in says it's safe. Because if you were in a life or death situation, you wouldn't be breathing out for longer than you were breathing in. You'd be trying to get as much air into your lungs as possible so that you can fight back or run away. Something else you can do in this regard is actually to chew gum. Again, if you were in a life or death situation, you wouldn't be stopping off to have a snack. So chewing gum can trick your mind into thinking that you're eating something, which is going to tell your mind that the information all your senses are taking in says it's safe. It's going to move you out of that fight or flight state. And if you've, maybe a football fan, you probably see football managers such as, well, from few years ago, Alex Ferguson was very famous for chewing gum during matches. Chewing gum has actually been scientifically proven to to reduce stress levels, to improve focus, to allow people to concentrate. So that is that. The next thing I'm going to show you is called EFT or Emotional Freedom Technique. I'm not going to show you the full EFT sequence, but it is in the workbook. So if you want to receive that, send me a direct message with your email address and I will send it out to you. But what I'm going to show you is a couple of pressure points. EFT works on the basis of chi energy, similar to acupuncture, but without the needles. And in Chinese medicine, they believe in qi energy or life force. They believe this energy flows throughout the body through meridian points around the body. If it becomes blocked, it creates bad feeling. So EFT involves rubbing the meridian points around the body and releasing that qi energy, reducing bad feeling. So if you'd like to just rub the fleshy part of your hand, you should notice that you find that soothing. You should notice that that helps you feel calmer, feel more relaxed. On the back of the hand, between the tendons of the little finger and the ring finger, if you rub in there, you should feel it seems a little sore. You feel that soreness, you know that you've got the right point. This is called the nine gamut point in Chinese medicine. Rubbing there, you should find that soothing as well. And this can be a very discreet way to relax if you are in a work environment and you're feeling stressed. You can rub these points. If you're in, I don't know, if you're on the tube or the metro and you don't like being in a encased in a steel tube, flying through tunnels causes you to get anxious. You can rub these points very discreetly and allow yourself to calm down. So Which of those techniques that I showed you there did you find most useful? Did you find the box breathing, 7-11 breathing, or did you find rubbing those meridian points to be more calming? Let me know in the chat box. Can also check in with yourself. Take that SUD score again. Ask yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, what am I feeling right now? And let me know in the chat box if that SUD score has gone down for you. Yep, as I said, EFT will be in the workbook. Excellent. So, something else you can do is to have a regular relaxation practice. That could be hypnosis, listening to hypnosis recordings can be very relaxing. Could be practicing Qigong or yoga, mindfulness meditation. I spoke earlier a little bit about mindfulness. People think that mindfulness and meditation means clearing your mind of thoughts, becoming, completely empty in the head. It doesn't mean that. It means becoming more aware of your thoughts and feelings. It means noticing your thoughts and feelings and not fighting them. As I said earlier, what resists not only persists but becomes stronger. By just noticing those thoughts and feelings, seeing them as separate from you, becoming an observer, you stop being controlled by them. You're allowed to say, okay, I'm feeling stressed right now. Is this feeling relevant? Is there any immediate threat or danger? If there is, obviously, you need to remove yourself from that situation. But if there isn't, you can say, okay, I'm feeling this right now. It's not relevant. You can just allow it to be and not fight against it. Reconnect with your emotions. So I spoke earlier about how we can become shamed out of our emotions as children, how what resists not only persists but becomes stronger. It's okay to feel emotions. One way you can start to reconnect with your emotions is by setting an alarm on your phone or whatever device you carry around with you that lets you know when you need to do things. And when that alarm goes off, check in with yourself. Ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? Be as specific as you can be. If you put emotion wheel into Google, click images, you're going to bring up a big chart or wheel of emotions. In the middle of that wheel are going to be your core emotions: happy, sad, angry, anxious. And then moving out from those emotions are going to be more specific emotions within that. So if it's sad, why are you feeling sad? Is it grief? If it's happy, why are you feeling happy? Is it joy? Anger could be rage. If you're feeling anxious, it could be because you are scared, etc. Be as specific as you can be. Take that SUD score that I showed you just now. Ask yourself what caused the feeling. What increases the feeling? What decreases the feeling? What evidence is there to support the feeling? And Yeah. What decreases the feeling? What increases the feeling? What thoughts relate to the feeling? And the more you do that, the more you're going to start to connect with your emotions. And the more you'll find yourself doing that naturally when you find yourself being triggered, moving into an emotional response. You'll find yourself doing that exercise naturally to start to have more control over your emotional responses. Does anyone have any questions with regards to any of that? Let me know in the chat box. Yeah, hypnosis. Talk more about what hypnosis is in a moment. But when a person experiences stress or particularly anxiety, anxiety is about, focusing on future events, about imagining the worst case scenario. One of the benefits of hypnosis is, that it's going to use your imagination. And more you use your imagination, the more you're going to be able to take control of your imagination and stop it from, creating anxiety inducing events in your mind. But I'm going to speak more on that in a moment. So, who wants to try some hypnosis? Let me know in the chat box if you want to try some hypnosis. Excellent. So hypnosis is a focused state of attention. If you've ever driven somewhere, got into your destination and not remembered the journey, that would be an example of hypnosis. If you've ever been watching TV, zoned out, lost track of time, whatever you were watching finished, and you thought, wow, where did all that time go? I'm ready for bed. That would be an example of hypnosis. So it's not something I do to you, something I do with you, something that I do with your cooperation. And the reason that hypnosis can be helpful to help and cope with stress and anxiety is because, firstly, as I said, it can be very relaxing. It can allow you to re-regulate the emotional part of your brain. And if a child experiences trauma, if a child grows up with dysfunction, that emotional part of their brain is actually going to increase in size, and the thinking part of their brain is going to decrease in size, making them more prone to emotional dysregulation. So, by having a regular relaxation practice, you can actually start to decrease the size of the emotional part of your brain, increase the size of the thinking part of your brain, making you less prone to emotional dysregulation, less prone to emotional issues. And because hypnosis is a focused state of attention, it does contain that element of mindfulness. As I said previously, it's also going to enable you to start to gain more control over your imagination, to stop being drawn into catastrophizing or imagining the worst outcomes, if that is what you do. And finally, your mind can't tell the difference between a real or an imagined event. So just by imagining yourself the way you want to be, you actually create new neural pathways in your brain. The more you imagine yourself that way, the stronger those neural pathways become, the more you can start to become that person. And to prove this to you, we're going to do a couple of exercises. So what I'd like everyone to do, take a couple of deep breaths in, breathing all the way down into your stomach, breathing out with a big sigh, taking a couple of breaths like that. Now I'd like you to hold your hands out in front of you, like so, with your palms straight. Turn your left hand with your palm facing up. Keep your right hand with your palm facing down. Take a deep breath in. Breathe out with a big sigh. Allow your eyes to close. And with your eyes closed, I'd like you to just imagine, only imagine, that in your left hand, we've placed some heavy leather-bound books. And those heavy books are weighing down on that left hand. They're the kind of old books that you... old leather-bound books. I wonder if you've ever been into your library and seen those big leather-bound books. To your right hand, we've tied some helium balloons, and those helium balloons are rising up, taking that right hand with them. So your left hand is sinking lower as your right hand is rising up. Just imagine that. Don't try to resist or assist it in any way. Just imagine it. Those heavy books in that left hand, those helium balloons on that right hand. The left hand sinking down as the right hand rises. Sometimes when we do this exercise, people tell me that they can feel their left arm becoming tired as though it's really holding those heavy books. And then leaving those hands where they are, open your eyes and see if you can notice the difference between those hands. If you notice a difference between those hands, let me know in the chat box. Let me know in the chat box if you notice a difference. Yep, your left hand got tired. Fantastic. So this is the power of visualization. As I said, your mind can't tell the difference between a real or an imagined event. Are some people resistant to hypnosis? No. As I said, hypnosis is a perfectly natural state, something that we all experience several times during the course of a day. But some people do have trouble visualizing. there's a condition which is, it's a very rare condition. It's called aphantasia, which When someone experiences that, they don't have any ability to visualize. They have trouble with memory because your memories are stored. You know, it's kind of visual files. You remember faces. To remember something, you have to bring up a visual representation of that. You know, if I tell you not to think of a pink elephant, you have to bring up a pink elephant in your mind so that you can see what I'm telling you not to think about. So everyone, apart from people with a very rare condition, can visualize. So, yeah, but it is like a muscle. The more you do it, the easier it becomes to do it. So the more you, as I said earlier, you know, the more you train your mind to focus on things you want it to focus on, the better you're going to be. Become, you know, focusing on the things you want to focus on, the less you're going to catastrophize and imagine negative events occurring. So hopefully that answers your question. Another exercise. So again, taking a deep breath in, breathing all the way down into your stomach as you breathe out, allow your eyes to close. And with your eyes closed, I'd like you to just imagine, only imagine, that you're walking into your kitchen. And there on the side in your kitchen is a nice bowl of juicy citrus fruits. Could be oranges or lemons, could be limes or grapefruits, whatever kind of citrus fruits you like. I'd like to just imagine there's a nice bowl of big, juicy ones in your kitchen right now. What we're going to do in just a moment, we're going to pick up one of those fruits. We're going to place it safely and securely on a cutting board. We're going to safely and securely take a knife and cut into that fruit. So I'd like to just imagine reaching out a hand, picking up one of those fruits. Maybe you can even get a sense of the weight of that fruit in your hand as you place it down on a cutting board. Then you safely and securely taking a knife, just imagine cutting into that fruit. As you're cutting into that fruit, those juices are squirting out. Those citrusy smells are filling the air, and the juices are running out. They're running down onto the cutting board, creating a nice puddle of juice under that fruit. Just imagine that now. And then cutting into that fruit again. So we're creating that nice bite-sized wedge. Again, those juices are squirting out, those citrusy smells are filling the air. That puddle of juice underneath that fruit is becoming larger and larger. Just imagining that. So now we've got this nice bite-sized wedge of fruit. We're going to pick it up. Maybe you can imagine again reaching out the way all the muscles and tendons in your arm work together as you reach out and pick up that fruit, shaking off any excess juices, lifting that nice wedge of fruit up towards your face. Smelling those citrusy smells, placing that fruit in your mouth and biting down. As you're biting down on that fruit, those juices are exploding in your mouth. Those citrusy flavors are tingling your taste buds, and the juices are running out, running down your face and dripping off your chin. Just imagine that now. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes and let me know in the chat box if that exercise made your mouth water. Let me know in the chat box. Did that exercise make your mouth water?